and welcome to Literary Lightering, the show that is all about lightering with a little bit of literary in it.
Yes. How are you guys doing today?
Fairly well.
Yes, today we are joined by Owen and Andrew and myself.
I am one of those people.
Yes. We don't have an Andy, though, because he's kind of ill at the moment.
So he says.
Yeah, he's probably just it's probably the palm oil he had yesterday. Anyway, we're going to dive straight into the news because you got all sorts. So shall we start off with Stephen King and get him out of the way?
I think that is the best way to deal with Stephen King.
Right. Oh, okay. Right.
Stephen King has won the Edgar Award for his killer thriller, Mr. Mercedes. He beat Ian Rankin and Karen Slaughter to America's top crime writing prize for a novel of everyday evil. And special awards have gone to James Ellroy and Lois Duncan as well. He's trying his hand at various other genres now.
He does, because to be fair, he has written every single possible horror book that could ever be conceived by a human being under the sun.
Did he deal with voodoo? I can't remember.
I feel like he must have dealt with voodoo at some point.
This is the thing. I honestly cannot remember what Stephen King has or has not dealt with. You know, but if you know, this book sounds interesting. Where are we? The novel in which a retired cop is taunted by the perpetrator of a massacre he never managed to solve sees King steer clear of paranormal elements to focus on a very human evil. It beat titles by more traditional practitioners of crime writing, including Ian Rankin, Stuart Neville and Karen Slaughter, to be named Best Novel at the Edgar Awards. So, congratulations to Stephen. It'd be interesting to read this, because Ian Rankin's really good as a crime writer, and so is Karen Slaughter.
Yeah, so I assume this must be a pretty good book then to beat them.
Which would make a change given some of the horror that he's been producing lately. It might actually be a good idea for him to switch genres.
Yeah, but I think that's what I mean. He is definitely like run out of steam horror-wise. It's like there's nothing really left for him to go.
He finished off the Dark Tower stuff as well, didn't he? He spent some time finishing that off.
Yes, I think he did.
Because the original Dark Tower trilogy, you know, what was it, The Drawing of the Three, The Gunslinger, and Wizard on Glass. I really liked those books. I thought they had a lot of potential. And then I read the rest of the Dark Tower series, and it was just kind of, they went from, you know, fairly easily readable books to these giant things that just, you could kill a man with them, with the hardback versions anyway. I thought, why scale it up that much?
I think he just got too into the series, I think.
Decided, possibly.
Oh, yes, this is the greatest thing ever. I must turn it into these sweeping masterpieces.
In the way, in the style of Robert Jordan.
Book.
Yes. Anyway, moving on. Art Spiegelman, right? Art Spiegelman has warned of a dangerous outcome as Russian shops are banning mouse. Now,
this is just such a dumb story.
Well, they're banning the Holocaust tale because it has a swastika on it, and it's a Nazi propaganda law.
Yeah, but it's not Nazi propaganda. It's very anti-Nazi.
Yeah, and Maus is one of the greatest graphic novels that deals with the Holocaust, if not the greatest.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else. There are very few that even try and deal with the Holocaust, and definitely none to that level.
Exactly. And it just kind of beggars belief. You know, Maus is superb.
Yeah.
It's a masterpiece. And I don't think any true lover of graphic novels or comic books would actually disagree with that statement.
Yeah, but no, it's another example of governments making a really dumb decision. Like, they haven't even bothered to check what the books are about.
Yeah.
It's just, it's got a swastika on the front. It is clearly Nazi propaganda.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the swastika has been around for thousands of years anyway.
Yeah.
So,
well, the swastika that's been around for thousands of years is actually the opposite of the one used, because the Nazis used the reversed swastika.
That's true, yeah.
and they remove the dots.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But you're right, that symbol has been around for thousands of years. But yeah, Moscow's major bookstores have withdrawn copies of Art Spiegelman's book under this Nazi propaganda law because it includes a swastika on the cover. And it's in an attempt to comply with this law banning Nazi propaganda. They really should read the book first.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least just ask somewhat. Oh, just stop making sweeping generalizations about things.
I'm sorry, his name is Art Spiegelman.
Yeah, I think that should be a bit of a clue.
You know, he's definitely Jewish.
Yeah.
Which means he's probably not a Nazi.
No, no, that's...
Yeah, I mean, if it was moused by Wolfgang von Hammerschmidt, then, like, maybe...
Okay, yeah,
maybe... Don't make me laugh while I'm coughing.
It's the best time to make you laugh.
I'll die.
And then I shall take over and I shall have the geek show.
You'll have to fight him for it first. And he's bigger than you.
He is. That could be a problem.
That could be an issue.
Yes.
Yes, you should never believe that David and Goliath story.
Yeah, that's a recipe for getting into trouble.
Yes.
Anyway, yes,
moving swiftly on.
Well,
have you got another point to make on this story?
Just got a point to make on this. Mouse has won a Pulitzer. It won it in 1992, and it was published in Russia in Russian in 2013. It's an anti-fascist narrative about the Holocaust, told through the memories of his father, a Polish Jew who moved to the United States. The novel portrays Jews as mice and Germans as cats. Now, the book's removal is apparently in response to a recent crackdown by Russian authorities on Nazi insignia. In December, Russia passed a law forbidding Nazi propaganda, and since then, authorities have reportedly raided toy stores and antique shops believed to carry the paraphernalia.
Okay.
Which means one thing, you know, you can no longer cosplay as Hitler.
No.
No.
That means Proletariat is no longer welcome in Russia.
Yeah.
But, the antique store, I understand you'll probably find stuff there because they're antiques.
Well,
but a toy store?
Well, here's the thing as well. What about video games?
Doom.
What about something like Wolfenstein?
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing in which you shoot Nazis in the face very much.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure that's not pro-Nazi.
Call of Duty World at War.
Yeah.
I'm less sure that that isn't pro-Nazi.
I'm pretty sure that Medal of Honor is not pro-Nazi.
Mm.
But yeah, according to Spiegelman...
Have you ever played these games online? I've met some of their fan base. I'm not so sure about their anti-Nazi-ness.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you shoot them.
Yeah. According to Spiegelman, I don't think that Mouse was the intended target for this, obviously. But I think the law had an intentional effect of squelching freedom of expression in Russia. The whole goal seems to be to make anybody in the expression business skittish. I actually have to agree. I think this is one of those efforts to try and curb the whole... it ties in with the whole law banning celebrity memes.
Yeah.
You know, but basically, I don't know why, but I get the feeling that that's what's his name? Oh, I forgot his name.
Putin.
Putin. That's it. Sorry, Mr. Putin. I didn't intentionally forget your name. Please don't send the KGB. Oh, sorry, they apparently don't exist.
Hello,
please don't
Russian.
Send the KGB.
Is a Russian
me.
Out the window? Hello.
So it's okay. We can always edit this and just Putin it in post.
Oh God. That was awful.
That was
horrible, Andrew. That
I'm
was a horrible,
ashamed.
Horrible joke. Yes, you should be ashamed of that joke.
I thought there was no pun I could make that would ever fill me with shame, but no, that is it.
I've
disappointed myself with my own
It
plans.
Has been done.
So, yes, putting that to one side. Yes.
Okay. Now we're all in the mode. Yes.
No. We're done with that. We're done with making jokes out of Putin. because he's managing to do it quite well himself.
Yes.
A law banning celebrity memes.
I mean, what's
and then and this as well. Do you kind of get the feeling that Spiegelman's got a point? He's trying to kill anybody in the expression business. He's trying to make them skittish. He's trying to scare them off.
I mean, what's next? Oh, we will ban cat videos because they promote capitalism.
Well, they do. I thought you knew that. I thought you knew that.
Yes, you filthy dissident and your want of cheeseburgers.
Of course.
Silly me.
Or desktop PCs. Don't forget those.
Fiendish capitalist piano playing.
Yes, fiendish capitalist piano
but
playing.
But weren't the Russians always really good at piano playing?
No, it was ballet. You have the wrong thing.
Ah, that's right, yes.
It was ballet, but then, you know...
Well, for the ballet to go to.
Yeah, but isn't ballet always something that only the richest could go and see?
Yes.
And the Russian ballet is probably one of the most popular.
See, I have a theory that what Putin wants, he either wants to bring back the Soviet Union, right?
Yeah.
Or he wants to be Tsar.
Either way, bringing either one back would just be... Yeah, everyone would be on their toes from then on.
No. He might actually want to be Tsar, which is why he hates Boney M. Rasputin.
Well, no, surely he would want to be Rasputin.
Oh, God.
Somebody make him stop with the Putin jokes.
Well, can we go on to a different story that doesn't involve Putin?
I can't stop myself. We have to move on for my own safety.
Yes.
And for everyone else.
Mark Twain. Let's go across to Safer Shores, where we're pretty sure the CIA aren't going to come and hunt us down.
But be on the watch out anyway.
Yes. Anyway, Mark Twain, stories, 150 years old. Barclay Scholars, go.
Yep. So, scholars at the University of California in Berkeley have uncovered like some stories written by Mark Twain when he was working for a newspaper, the San Francisco Chronicle. So just a bunch of articles and stories that he wrote for that. Apparently they'd like go on a whole range of topics, including the San Francisco police, which never a good idea to make fun of them.
No.
Oh, well, apparently they at one point tried to sue Mark Twain for comparing the chief of police to a dog. to a dog chasing its own tail.
Oh.
Well, he probably was very, very similar.
Oh, almost definitely.
Isn't that kind of on par with UKIP going to the Kent Police about, have I got news for you? It's the same.
Possibly.
Satirical and someone's trying to say, no, you cannot do that.
You know, I there's something I've always been curious about, right? You know when they do, you know in movies like Bullet where it's, you know, Steve McQueen driving around San Francisco.
Oh, yes.
You know when they always do those chase scenes in San Francisco and they got the hilly bit?
Yeah.
You know? If you ever played Driver, you know, you did that bit as well.
Oh, yes.
But that hilly bit, right? And they always have the car going down the hill and then jump and then jump and then jump all the way down the hill. But San Francisco has been around for a long time, right? For a couple of hundred years. And before they had automobiles, they had horses. So how did that work with horses?
How did
that chase scene work with horses?
Now I just want to see like the police just all like kind of side trotting down.
Exactly.
Oh, that would just be...
And that's how dressage was born.
Do you see where I'm going with this? It's got me curious. I mean, or a horse with a wagon. You know, if you're chasing a horse and cart or something like that.
How does that work? Even if you're just going down on normal speed, though, you just go down that hill. Because some of them are quite long. Some of them.
Yeah.
So
you see what
horse
I'm going with
in the cart. In the cart, we'll just get the way down.
You see where I'm going with this? It's just kind of... How does it work with a horse and cart or like a chariot or something like that?
Well, no, it's okay because the horses are actually easily able to navigate the hills using their tentacles.
That's right,
because
yes.
Ponies have tentacles,
oh, God.
As I have established.
He's still on this. If you want to know more about this, then just listen to the four panel.
But if you do
but
want
I
to
I think
know...
it's kind of just been spreading across all my shows this week.
Yes, it
like
has.
Like a virus.
Yes. Anyway, Mark Twain, 150 stories. What was it? It was unearthed. Where was it unearthed? Where did they find these?
I think just they found them at the university.
I was going to say they can't have just been lying around. Were they found in like one of the attics at the university? Normally, when people find stuff like this, it's always in an attic or a basement in a chest of some sort.
Yes. No, they just say they have uncovered and authenticated a cache of Starias.
Oh, a cache.
So you say cache, I say cash.
That's because I'm fancy.
Oh.
Yes. He pronounces the E.
I do.
Anyway, Marion Coates has won the 2015 Welcome Book Prize for The Iceberg. Chair of Judges Bill Bryson said Coates' account of living with her husband's illness and death is wise, moving, and beautifully constructed. Now, yeah. Coates, an artist and writer, was married to the Independent's art critic Tom Lubbock. In 2008, he was diagnosed with a brain tumour, which in time took away his ability to speak. In 2011, he died. Bryson continued to say, reading it, you have the sense of something truly unique being brought into the world. It stays with you for a long time after. The Welcome Book Prize was created to celebrate fiction and non-fiction, which engages in some way with medicine, health, or illness.
It definitely sounds like a very powerful story.
Yeah.
I've heard very good things about The Iceberg. I've heard very, very good things about The Iceberg. It's one of those books that I think captures something about that kind of period, about staying with somebody who you know is not got long left.
Yeah.
You know how when you're dealing with the loss of somebody, you need some kind of closure, you need some kind of, you know, some way of coping.
Yeah.
And I think this will appeal to a lot of people who have gone through that.
Yeah.
Which is most people, unfortunately. So, yeah. Congratulations to Marion Coates. I think it's a well-deserved award.
Definitely well-deserved.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it is.
Okay. Moving on from there. No, Polly Hollywood, you can shut up about complaining about Clarkson and stuff. George R. R. Martin. Right. George R. R. Martin is much more interesting than Paul Hollywood and Jeremy Clarkson put together, because he looks like...
Yes, and is probably the equal weight of that.
Yes. Yes, he is. He is. He also looks like a retired fisherman.
Yes.
He does.
He looks like the previous Captain Birdseye.
Yeah, Captain Birdseye let himself go. And then some. Too many fish fingers, was it?
That's how the series is going to end.
No. The irony there would be if it was the chicken nuggets. That's the real irony.
It's got to be the fish fingers. It's got to be the fish fingers. He's always... It's Birdseye, fish fingers. It's always fish fingers.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that is how the series ends. Wow, Daenerys, thank goodness we were able to stop the White Walkers with the help of these Birdseye fish fingers.
No, the frozen peas. Frozen peas as well. The two things Birdseye are most famous for advertising, the frozen peas and the fish fingers,
yes.
Well, of course, real connoisseurs know it's all about the potato waffles.
Oh, God. I forgot about them.
I mean, we're talking about previous Captain Birdseye, George R. R. Martin, and not his famous foods.
Yes. George R. R. Martin has revealed that Game of Thrones readers have the Grateful Dead to thank for inspiring his writing. Fans of both the fantasy novels and the psychedelic rock band have noted similarities between the two, and recently the author has confirmed their eagle eyes as accurate. I'm certainly a fan of Grateful Dead. I've attended concerts, and my wife, Paris, is perhaps even more of a fan of the Grateful Dead. Hang on, Paris? His wife is called Paris? It's not Paris Hilton, is it? Because he's punching above his weight.
That much is debatable.
Yeah, it's debatable, but, you know, she's like, she's got more money than him for a start.
Is that all you care about, the money?
Yeah. What else is there?
Anyway.
As Tina Turner said, what's love got to do with it?
Nope, sorry. Captain Birdseye and Paris Hilton has broken me. I can no longer even.
Yes, I don't think it is Paris Hilton. I just think it's
Paris Martin.
Okay.
Yes.
See, Paris Martin makes it sound like a bird, like a house martin.
A bit, yeah.
Is she related to the swift in any way, or swallows?
Anyway.
That was a horrible, horrible thing I just said.
Yes, anyway, it was. Can we just...
Leaving that to one side.
Yes.
Anyway.
Actually, I feel like there's a joke I can't make because we're... The radio.
There's plenty of jokes that can't be made.
Yes, and I accidentally just made one. Moving on, Martin has said, he added that his famous rock and roll novel, The Armageddon Rag from 1983, was most heavily impacted by his music taste.
It's a book entirely about music.
Yes. He's also,
and also Lord of the Rings.
He has said, I do have Grateful Dead lyrics rattling around in my head all the time. Ripple is one of my favorite songs of all time. There is a road, no simple highway. You know, Grateful Dead are set to reunite for a string of 50th anniversary gigs, and I'm pretty sure Martin has tickets. Maybe he's trying to get tickets by admitting this now.
Tickets for life.
This is awfully convenient timing.
Yes, it is. So, yeah. Oh, maybe he was offered tickets in order to say this. We don't know.
The conspiracy theorists will have a field day with this.
The truth is out there.
But are you ready for the truth?
No, I'm not, Mulder.
We don't want to know what's happening with our Martin. What else do we have in the news?
Okay, this is actually quite... I don't like this one. Right.
Okay.
A first edition copy of late Colombian writer Gabriel García Márquez's masterpiece, 100 Years of Solitude, was stolen at the International Book Fair of Bogota on Sunday. The copy's owner, Alvaro Castillo Granada, said the edition was locked in a cabinet during the festival. Mr. García Márquez is celebrated as Colombia's most popular and critically acclaimed author. In 1982, he won the Nobel Prize for Literature for his novels and short stories, in which the fantastic and the realistic are combined in a richly composed world of imagination, reflecting a continent's life and conflicts. Now, if you haven't had the opportunity to read anything by Gabriel García Márquez, I suggest you do.
I'm pretty sure we've mentioned him in the show before, haven't we?
We have. He was second to none.
Yeah.
He is basically one of the 20th century's greatest authors. There are very few people who can challenge him for the top spot.
Mm.
Very few. And I include Pratchett in that as well.
Yeah, I was wondering when you'd bring that up.
Pratchett was very, very good at what he did, but yeah. Marquez was... it's difficult to compare the two.
Yeah.
It's difficult to compare the two because they had very different approaches.
That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, when you've got different approaches to the medium, how can you compare them? I mean, they've both got their own... the different ways of doing it.
Styles.
It's hard to...
Pratchett went for comedy. Marquez did some comedy, but not much.
No.
I think it's shocking that that someone's stolen it.
The effort they would have had to have gone to get this. Well,
I think looking at the story, it stands out to me, apparently, of our Castillo, said the true value is sentimental.
Yeah.
Which makes it seem like pointless, a cruel thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a signed copy, right? Following García Márquez's death in April of last year, the first editions of his works have risen in value, and the missing novel has an estimated worth of $60,000, £40,000. However, Mr. Castillo says his signed copy was priceless. The novel featured a written message from the late author to Alvaro Castillo, the old bookseller, as yesterday and forever, your friend Gabo.
That is the tragedy of the thing.
It was his personal copy given to him by his friend.
That is an awful thing to do.
Yeah, it is. So that's
unfortunate things. We'd have to look in. You'd have to watch black market auctions or book auctions to see if it'll rise again. The unfortunate thing is that
I don't think it'll appear.
No, well, it can't, because if it's signed specifically to him, like, you can't sell that on without it obviously being that stolen copy.
Unless they remove the message.
Yeah, but that would damage the book.
No, that's true. That's true.
Anyway, moving on. Georges-Louis Borges's, Borges' classic tale, The Library of Babel, or The Infinite Library, whichever one you call it, you know, in that book, the librarians are driven mad searching through an infinite number of books, most of them meaningless, hunting for answers to the fundamental mysteries of humankind. Now,
and then at the end they find out it's been misfiled in the wrong section.
Yes, Dewey Decimal System is a godsend. Now, 75 years later, Borges fans may question the sanity of one writer who has attempted the extraordinary task of recreating the Argentine writer's endless library online. Yep.
What?
Jonathan Basile, who lives in Brooklyn, New York, has spent 6 months creating a digital version of the Library of Babel, which contained all possible books with all possible combinations of letters. Mr. Basile described his online library as having more books than the universe has atoms. He said, if completed, it would contain every book that has ever been written and every book that ever could be, including every play, every song, every scientific paper, every legal decision, every constitution, every piece of scripture, and so on.
That's a hell of a claim.
Yeah, but surely it can't be completed because it's the infinite library.
Yes.
It's kind of just a waste of time then.
Well, kind of, yeah, but, you know, it's his passion project. And I think that while it isn't going to be infinite, it'll be basically, they'll probably do it as a procedurally generated thing.
Yeah.
You know.
I guess.
Yeah, you know, with some kind of memory function that will identify which combinations have been used before, and then it basically, if they do it as a first person navigation thing, you basically see what the library in front of you, and you explore the library just using the point and click stuff. If they do it with that memory function, so it remembers what combinations have gone before, and they do it procedurally generated, so each time you get a new thing, so each book you pick up is a new book, then it could work.
Yeah.
It's a very simple thing to do.
I don't see the point of it. Like, I know it's this guy's passion, but surely he could spend his time doing something more productive.
Yes, I agree. But still, you know, as much as I agree, I like the fact that someone's actually taken the time to try. Because at the end of the day, I think that the trying is the most important part.
Yeah.
I guess I can see where you're coming from, but I think I still disagree.
Well, he's so much of a Borges fan. He's actually gone out and tried to do something based on the work that the author that he loves, or the author's works. You know, I don't see many people doing stuff like that for authors these days.
No, that's true.
Unless it's Harry Potter or Terry Pratchett. Do you see what I mean?
I guess the problem is, in my mind, I am kind of associating with that same breed of person who writes, like, the massive elaborate Harry Potter fan fictions.
Are you a Harry Potter fan fiction writer?
No, don't be silly. I'm a tentacle unicorn fan fiction writer. God, Rob.
But you're not
a real connoisseur. A real connoisseur of the fan fiction world.
No, he's not Japanese. He can't claim that.
Why? Because of the unicorn or the tentacles?
The tentacles.
Yeah, yes, I can, because I've stared into the abyss of fan fiction, and it has stared back into me.
Into the abyss into the abyss of the internet.
I've seen things, guys. Terrible, terrible things.
Yeah, unfortunately, there is a dark corner of the internet.
There is a dark corner of the internet. It's called the internet. Okay, right, just a couple of pieces of news just to finish off. Sadly, as everyone's probably heard, Ruth Rendell has died at the age of 85. The creator of Inspector Wexford also wrote as Barbara Vine. She was admitted to hospital after a serious stroke in January. She's sadly passed away. One of the better crime writers, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Especially of, like, the modern crime writers, I think.
Yeah. I think that the likes of Karen Slaughter and Patricia Cornwell took a lot of cues from Rendell.
Yeah, definitely.
Because Rendell herself took a lot of cues from Christie, We know this.
Well, it's interesting.
Not just Christie,
kind of like,
but also Conan Doyle as well.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the torch has been passed along.
Yeah. Who do you think is going to pick up the torch now that Rendell's gone?
Not James Patterson, that's for sure.
No. I think for the sake of tradition, I think it'll probably be somebody female.
Oh, yeah. I think it tends to be that women make the best crime writers.
I do think Patricia Cornwell is probably at the top of the list, more so than Karen Slaughter. I have to say I prefer Cornwell's books to Slaughter's.
Yeah, but I think both of them were trying to bump them up to fill a vacuum.
Yeah.
I feel like it needs to more be that someone just comes out of somewhere and is just like,
actually, it might
look
be
at
someone
these crime
might,
books I've written.
Someone might come out of left field. Anyway, she was Baroness Randall of Baburg, the creator of Inspector Wexford and author of more than 60 novels. The crime writer of Val McDermid is a contender.
Oh, yeah, possibly.
She has voiced the sorrow of many Rendell fans when she heard the news. Ruth Rendell was unique. No one can equal her range or her accomplishment. No one has earned more respect from her fellow practitioners, said McDermid. It's it's a sad day because she was in crime writing. She was a legend.
Definitely. It's going to be a tough act to follow, I think.
Aye. Right, okay. From the rather sad news, we're going to go on to something completely different. We're going to talk about Wolf Hall.
Yes, Wolf Hall.
You've been waiting for this one.
I have, because we finally have answers to a question that has been burning through our mind. Probably the hottest piece of controversy over this series, and certainly the TV adaptation. I can now exclusively confirm that, yes, research has confirmed that the cod pieces in TV version of Wolf Hall are too small. I know, it's a shocking revelation.
Yes.
I'm certainly stunned.
Apparently, at Cambridge Conference, the proud history of the 16th century phallic accessory. Let me restart that.
You can't even talk. You're so shocked by the story.
The cod pieces in the adaptation of Hilary Mantel's Wolf Hall are definitely too small, according to a Cambridge academic who has been researching the 16th century accessory through the literature and paintings of its time. Victoria Miller, who is due to give a paper on cod pieces at a Cambridge University conference on the 30th of April, give a paper on codpieces at a Cambridge University conference on the 30th of April. Concurred with actor Mark Rylance, who plays Thomas Cromwell in the adaptation, and who said late last year, "I think the codpieces are just too small. I think that was a directive from our American producers, PBS. They wanted smaller codpieces." The program is fantastic, but you can barely see them, agreed Miller. They're way too small to be accurate. They should be at least double the size. You can kind of see them there, but they aren't really stuffed and are easily missed. They've really toned them down for a mainstream audience. The codpiece was meant to draw the eye to the general region.
You know how I was critical of that guy trying to recreate the Infinite Library?
Yeah.
Suddenly I feel like what he's doing is a lot less of a waste of time.
My point, exactly.
It does seem like a bit of a ridiculous...
Do you know what they should do? Do you remember the cameo video from the 80s for Word Up?
Vaguely.
You know, I'll play ladies around the world. Yeah. Do you remember he just wore that skin tight black spandex and the big red cod piece?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
They should have used him as a character model for Wolf Hall and said, this is how you do it. This is the size the cod piece should be. Should be a skinny black guy with a giant red cod piece on it.
It's just big, like the anti-Game of Thrones.
It's so big he could use it as a helmet. Codpiece as in fish? It's too small to be a helmet.
This is not going to end well. This will not end well. Is there anything else to talk about?
Yes.
Wait, just one second. It's Milady, let me hold the door open for you. Look, no hands. Oh,
I can't believe you went there, Andrew.
I went there.
Right.
You went there and there's no going back.
Right.
I've ruined this show.
Right, okay. We're going to leave codpieces and various other things to one side.
Please,
unless
let's.
They are mentioned in the book that Andrew is going to review for us now.
Is there a chance of that?
Surprisingly, no. There's not a single codpiece in this book, which I think it's the worst for it. But I don't even want to review this now. It's pointless with its lack of codpieces.
So that's the only is that the main negative of this book? There's no codpieces?
Pretty much. But no, what I'm reviewing is a book by Kim Newman called The Nightmare, which, guys, it's Nightmare, but it sounds like Nightmare because it's about dreams.
You only figured that out today. I don't know why you're taking that tone with us. You've only just figured that out.
Not fair.
That's not, yeah, I didn't figure it out at all. You had to tell me.
True.
Yes.
Okay, so let's read the verb. Okay. So, welcome to the city made from a dream. But this isn't any dream. It is the dream of a haunting nightmare of a killer. In the near future, old-fashioned movies or flatties have been replaced by dreams, virtual reality scenarios written by professional dreamers. When an infamous criminal, Truro Dane, escapes imprisonment, he flees into the city, an artificial world of his own creation, where he rules as the all-powerful Nightmare. Now, detective dreamer Tom Tunney and Susan Bishoprick, author of Romance Dreams, must join forces to track him down. But how do you hunt the nightmare in a city populated by a dense crowd of strangely familiar characters, where it's always 2:30 in the morning, shots never kill, and the creator is omnipresent in every drop of falling rain?
Interesting.
Yes.
But was it interesting?
It was. I really enjoyed it.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you didn't like the last book I got you to review.
Yeah, but that's because it wasn't a good book. I like this book because it is a good book.
Okay,
that's how things work.
All right.
That's kind of how the reviews were. Is it a good book? No. Is it a good book? Yes. Moving on.
Okay, so tell us more about this. Why did you like it?
Yeah, but I liked it because, like, it's pretty much about the tropes of, like, classic film noir.
Okay.
So, like, the whole point is the entire Dream City is structured like a classic noir film. Like, literally, you're introduced to the main character and just... he's waiting on the street corner because he's just been through a montage of clue solving. So he knows he just has to stand and wait for the next clue to appear. And like literally every gutter he goes to, there's someone bleeding out into it.
Lovely.
Okay.
And just like they go to places and like the sets will wobble.
It's beginning to sound a bit like Dark City.
Yes, I was very much reminded of Dark City. Because it's a lot like that where like the city itself is constantly shifting and changing because obviously it's a dream. And what I realize is that sometimes they'll accidentally stumble across like other film tropes. Like, just at one point, a werewolf appears.
As it does.
Yeah, because obviously, like, this dream is made up by this one guy. Like, his imagination keeps going a bit random.
Okay. Wow.
And it's a really nice effect.
I think I'm going to have a read of this so I can actually understand exactly what
you're
talking
about. Oh, yeah. It's like, it's near impossible to explain, but, like, once you read it, you kind of get it.
I think I'm going to have a read this. Yeah. It does sound good, though. It does sound good.
But it's cool because like, it's also not just set in the dream. Like, there's bits outside as well.
Okay.
So like the dream's sort of influenced by outside influences?
No, but like there's two main characters. So like, first guy, he kind of starts off in the dream. But the second one, she gets brought in later. So initially, like you get to find out about just the general world. That's a really interesting world. It's got a real Philip K. Dick type feel.
Okay.
With just lots of kind of made it, like basically the whole grammar of English has changed. It's like you can go and you can out check a building instead of check out.
Okay.
And they've got stuff like there's also a really nice plant aesthetic.
Okay.
So like you've got devices which kind of look like kind of blooming flowers that you can put on your head and that's how you enter dreams.
Sounds as long as Freddy Krueger doesn't make an appearance.
Oh, no.
Plot twist.
Godzilla does, though.
What?
Like, it's awesome, because, like, the woman, Susan, like, as soon as she enters the dream, she's just like, right, what is the best way I can take this thing apart? I know, I'm gonna make a kaiju.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah, things tend to get a bit crazy.
I think I'm definitely going to have to agree to this. Okay, right. Thank you for that review. We're going to move on to what should we do first? I think we can save the Shakespeare one till afterwards. I think we have to start off with clickbait books.
Oh, yes. Clickbait books are the best books.
Do you want to explain to us what clickbait books are?
Okay, so it all started a few days ago on Twitter. Basically, Waterstones put out a thing saying, like, hashtag clickbait books, 7 things you have to destroy before you can kill Voldemort. So the idea, it's books with the titles rewritten to sound like clickbait.
Well, not so much the titles rewritten, but what the book's about.
Yeah, I guess pretty much.
We're going to start off with Get a Bikini Body in 5 Days by Following This Caterpillar's Diet. And that's for the very hungry caterpillar.
So, yes, it's like all of Waterstone's followers who've just taken it up and they've done such great things. Like, 7 Things You Never Knew About the Middle East by T.E. Lawrence. Which is because I think Lawrence of Arabia, isn't it?
Yeah, it is Lawrence of Arabia. What about this one? Oranges are not the only fruit. 15 antioxidant-packed alternatives.
Actually, one of my favorites is dentists hate this one weird trick to get yourself a free chocolate factory.
This family built a massive extension into the back of a wardrobe. You'll never look at closet space the same way again.
I do quite like that one. That is quite good.
I think just one of my favorites is just like the sheer cruelty, because this is how people think is... If Disney princesses were rewritten by 19th century German brothers.
Ouch.
Yes.
Yeah, it's harsh, but it's also so true.
33 fun ways to kill a mockingbird.
We put a plane full of boys on an island with a dead pilot and a pig. What happened next will destroy your faith in humanity.
Yes. The Bible also received the same treatment. Everlasting life, one simple trick doctors do not want you to know. Oh, sorry, do not want you to see.
They nailed him to a cross, but you'll never believe what happened 3 days later.
Yes. Meet the adorable baby who overcame a shed birth and developed superpowers.
Which I like when I said that, your first response was, oh, Superman.
Yes. What else? Are you the best of times or the worst of times? Take our quiz.
Just 451 Fahrenheit, who can't even.
Oh my god, discover how Dorian Gray stays so young with his one weird trick.
Oh my god, meet the pigs in charge of the whole farm.
Yes.
That sounds like a delightful children's book.
A man wandered around Dublin for a day. You won't understand a word of what he did.
Which, to be fair, yes, I don't.
I think this is for James Joyce.
Yeah, it is. It's like, it's Finnegan's Wake, just the most confusing book ever written.
Yes. What's next?
Now we are moving on to Jane Austen with this one weird old truth that's universally acknowledged.
Yes, and the Brontes, he kept his wife locked in the attic for years and the woman married him anyway.
Yeah, and I think that's all of it. I do like the way that Waterstones just finished this off with, we are loving clickbait books. Mainly because it looks like we've invented a whole new method of book marketing.
They have. All right.
I just want to say, this is one reason why I do love the internet. It's the fact that it is a great avenue for people to just come up with these brilliant one-line jokes and just will deliver them to the world. And they are just fantastic.
True. Right. We are coming up to the end of the show. So we're going to close you out with... it's William Shakespeare's birthday around this time of year, and so we thought 50 popular phrases that came from the famous playwright. Shall we take these in turn, Andrew? Do you want to start us off, Andrew?
Yeah, so we've got Fancy Free from Midsummer Night's Dream.
We have Lilo by from Much Ado About Nothing.
Are we talking about Lilo as in the swimming thing, or Lilo as in, Lilo, to Lilo?
To Lilo, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Send Packing.
And Foregone Conclusion.
Sorry Sight.
Where are we? That was from Macbeth, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yes. For Goodness Sake from Henry VIII.
Good Riddance.
Neither Here Nor There, Mathello.
Mum's the word from Henry VI, part two.
What's done is done, from Macbeth again.
Uh-huh. Eating out of house and home, Henry VIII, part two. No, Henry IV, part two.
Yes. Rant from Hamlet. I'm still... I know... I can remember the reference for that one, but, you know, just hearing it just on its own.
No, wait, from Macbeth is knock, knock, who's there? How did they tell jokes before Shakespeare?
That's so true. That's so true. From The Merchant of Venice, with bated breath.
A wild goose chase from Romeo and Juliet, because apparently there were geese chasing each other.
Fair enough.
Assassination from Macbeth.
The one-word things I don't get. It's not really a phrase, is it?
That's no.
You don't really go around every day going, assassination.
Don't you?
No.
You weirdos.
Then you got too much of a good thing as you like it.
A heart of gold from Henry V.
Such stuff as dreams are made on the Tempest. I think that's like the most Shakespearean sounding of all of these.
Yeah.
Then you got fashionable.
From Troilus and Cressida.
Yes.
Puking from As You Like It.
Oh, God.
And, you know, when you put them together, it just says puking as you like it.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, Dead as a Doornail from Henry IV, part two.
Not Slept One Wink by, I think it's...
from?
From Cymbeline.
Cymbeline, yeah.
Not Slept One Wink from Cymbeline.
The World's Mine Oyster from The Merry Wives of Windsor.
Okay.
Obscene. That's from Love's Labour's Lost.
You got Bedazzled from The Taming of the Shrew.
In Stitches from Twelfth Night.
Oh, apparently Othello is like the first use of the word addiction.
Still not sure about the one-word things.
I guess it's like the first time these words were used.
Possibly, yeah.
Could be. Then you got Faint-Hearted from Henry VI, part one.
On One Fell Swoop from Macbeth.
Vanish into Thin Air from Othello.
Swagger from Henry V, because of course...
He's got swagger. Henry V has got swagger.
That he did.
Sorry.
I mean, of course, Henry V, I imagine Mick Jagger was in that.
Are you sure this line wasn't from Love's Labour's YOLO?
Yes. Anyway, Own Flesh and Blood from Hamlet.
Zany from Love's Labour's Lost.
I love the hands that when you said that.
It's the zany hands. You've got to do the zany hands.
Oh, no, those were jazz hands you did.
Because jazz is zany.
No, it's not. It's jazz. Zany is Charleston.
Right, this is now the zany hands.
Yes.
We also have Give the Devil His Due from Henry IV, part one.
There's a method in my madness, honest. That's from Hamlet, not from me.
Salad days from Antony and Cleopatra.
I need more of those.
Spotless reputation from Richard II.
Full circle from King Lear.
All of a sudden from The Taming of the Shrew.
And Come What Come May from Macbeth. And there we go.
It's a surprising number in modern usage. I'm not sure about assassination being in general usage, but, you know, we'll go with it. He was the Bard of Avon. He dead. Anyway.
And that concludes our summary of William Shakespeare.
Yes, that was Shakespeare in 5 minutes, brought to you like by Literary Loitery. Now, we're going to go off and food.
With a bit of loitering involved.
No, food first, then loiter.
Okay. Bit of literacy afterwards?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, we're done with books now.
Yes, we're done with books now. For a week. Right. I have been Rob.
I've been Owen.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all next week.
Assassination.
Sabotage.